Welcome to the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy. This is the place for everything related to Amazon private label and e-commerce. Learn exactly what you need to start or scale your business. Get insights from the top industry experts who will discuss the latest trends and best practices in the world of Amazon. From choosing products and sourcing from a supplier to setting up your Amazon account and marketing your business, you will hear it here. Let's get started. Here is your host, Vincenzo Toscano.
Hello, guys. My name is Vincenzo Toscano, and welcome to another episode of the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy, where we're going to be talking everything related to Amazon FBA, private label, and e-commerce. And today, we'll bring you another special guest. Her name is Nikki Lindgren, and she's the founder and managing partner at Pennock, where they specialize in a sustainable and long-term approach, grow basically brands in D2C. That's why I wanted to bring Nikki today, because when it comes to, especially with us mainly do business in marketplace such as Amazon and Walmart, sometimes it's difficult to really open our mind and strategies beyond what we can do in the D2C side of things and how we can actually bring things such as social commerce to the equation, which is something that is such a big thing that has been affecting and basically penetrating e-commerce. Like, we see TikTok Shop really being a topic that is all over the place. Like, you go to LinkedIn and every person is talking about how this is bringing significant growth to their business. And that's what I effectively wanted to talk with Nikki today, like how things such as TikTok Shop, if you effectively implement them, can help you grow your business. But beyond that, what are the foundations you need to have in place before you actually put money into paid media and go into scale mode? So, Nikki, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today. How are you doing?
Great, Enzo. Thank you so much for having me here.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for coming to the show. For me, this is such an interesting topic. I feel social commerce, as I told you, in the Amazon and Walmart community is becoming more trendy than ever. And the reality is because effectively what is happening is that people is struggling in marketplaces because fees are going up. There's much more competition. And now people is looking for ways to, you know, diversify and grow their presence outside of effectively these bubbles, as we call them. So I'm very excited to talk about that because I know you have an extensive experience when it comes to that. And that's why I wanted to give you the opportunity to tell us a little bit about who is Nikki and effectively what are some of the things that you guys have done at Pennock.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of as you kicked off, I'm founder and managing partner at Pennock, and we work with beauty brands and lifestyle brands to help them grow both their e-commerce presence, which is usually a Shopify storefront, as well as their presence on social commerce. And we do all of that through ads management. And we're talking about any ads platform that's going to drive people to e-commerce or social commerce. We do a little bit of SEO work for a handful of our clients too, but those are really our core disciplines and the areas in which we focus.
Awesome. That's actually so exciting. And I like the niche approach. I think I have so many partners in the space, specifically in e-commerce. And usually the beauty of that is that you're able to go so much deeper into the rabbit hole of understanding how consumers behave in a specific niche, in this case, beauty and lifestyle. So I'm sure specifically for those watching and listening that maybe have a brand in that space, they're going to get some of those extra insights that you're going to be sharing in terms of how they can successfully grow their brand in this space. So to get started, we mentioned social commerce, okay? And social commerce is such a broad term because it includes so many things. So I guess we can start with the definition of what social commerce means, because it's not the same as e-commerce as we know it. So let's start with that. And then, of course, we use that as a starting point to go deeper into the topic.
Yeah, sure. So social commerce for us in the e-commerce space generally means Instagram shop, or AKA Meta shop behind the scenes, and TikTok shop. And so the work we're doing on those two platforms that facilitate growth of those two platforms is really pushing as much traffic to purchase from those social shopping environments on TikTok and really on Instagram as possible. And we facilitate that mostly through paid ads, but we'll help with strategies around creators, affiliates, etc., that can also help grow there. I will say within like more of the beauty space, there is a platform called Flip that gets used a lot, and that's really just a product review site and a little bit more of a affiliate environment. So we haven't done a lot of work there, but it's just something we kind of have to stay in the know of where else people are doing you know, social vetting and justification for products and purchase.
Love it. It seems, and that's why connecting to the brief comment I did at the beginning, when it comes to niching down in this case, as you guys are doing when it comes to lifestyle and beauty brands, from talking to people now that I hear your definition of social commerce, it seems that to some extent, also social commerce is heavily dependent on the type of products, right, that you actually bring into market. Because I also been having the experience that social commerce for some specific categories effectively doesn't behave as effective as it should because of the nature of the interaction you usually have through this different methodology. So let's maybe start dissecting that a little bit from the perspective of the main difference. Like, what are some of the factors that you feel a product must have or the brand itself to then start considering that maybe social commerce is the way to go rather than the traditional route? Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, I think it kind of comes down to understanding your business, the problem your business is solving with its products, and then your persona. And I bring this up because if you're a high price point item, let's talk about a sofa or a couch for your living room, that's thousands of dollars. People are not going to go buy that on Instagram shops or Meta shop or TikTok shop, right? But that still can apply to lower price point items when you think about factoring in who your persona is. So I've helped advise a couple of brands that are not our clients that cater to more mature audiences and are a new formulation of skincare. So it's sort of like made custom just for you. And because it's kind of first to market and it caters to mature audiences, test for them for TikTok shops, not successful, right? These older, more mature demo want to go to the e-commerce site, learn about this first to market product a little bit more deeply and intimately before making a purchase. And it's not because it's a high price point item. It's just the behavior of the shopper, the nature of the product. And so like, that's why I would maybe say, look at your Google Analytics data and see what is the lag time to purchase, the number of days that pass from first coming to e-com to then purchasing, and also the touch point. So regardless of days, how many times have they come back to your website before making that purchase? Because that will help you identify how much you're missing out on social commerce or not. Those higher involvement processes and longer processes are going to be better still serving most customers pointing to your Shopify store or other storefront.
Yeah, that's key. Defining avatar, this is something, you know, unfortunately a lot of people miss. Not miss from the perspective that maybe they don't do it, that is that they do the wrong assumption. They might think, because I don't know, I'm a person that play tennis and I know the tennis space very well, I do certain assumptions about products I want to bring in the tennis space, and then you realize you're actually only a micro niche within the niche itself, and you end up, you know, leaving a huge a chunk of this of the category out of your consideration when it comes to a strategy from an advertising point of view. Now, this effectively comes into connection with the other side of the conversation, which is creating the foundation before even getting started with social commerce, because I understand the point you briefly made in terms of using, for example, Google data and using that as some of your insights. But sometimes people, when getting started, they might not have even that because they might not run any kind of traffic in the first place. So I guess I'm curious to know, and I'm sure you have done this with so many of your clients already, like if you're looking to launch to market for the first time and you don't really have insights because you don't have any test data, is there any maybe tools or methodology or exercise that you implement with this brand to really understand, okay, this is effectively the way we can determine the avatar, and from the avatar we can decide if social commerce is for us or not? Is there some kind of tips you can provide on that?
Yeah, subject? Sure. I'll try to answer that as best I can. And it's a little convoluted because I think like there are two paths to success for new brands. And I think it really matters on kind of like the funding and where they are in their life journey. And I mentioned to this prior to the recording, but there are some early stage brands that are self-funded and they don't have their earned or owned media on lockdown, which is really kind of your organic social growth and engagement, your email, SMS, and then anything in the PR or creator lane. It's all like going not so well yet, right? So if those things are not going well and you're like, and I have a couple thousand dollars to throw at ads, it's usually not enough to create that flywheel effect. And so we're pretty methodical around the timing by which paid should be brought into play. And it will depend based on like the funding, the life stage of the brand, even if it is earlier. And so if you're kind of going to market, you know your persona, you're not quite sure what you're going to have from a budgeting perspective, but your price point is such that you think people are going to buy quite quickly, I would probably explore social commerce, maybe even before e-commerce, ads pointing to e-commerce, just to reduce that friction as much as possible. You also might be working on improving your website or really just stacking it up, in which case, like pointing to social and not having them really even explore the experience on your website could be beneficial. But again, those are for those brands that we do believe would convert quite quickly on social.
Nice. And now I guess the question a lot of people may have from this is like from e-commerce, for example, when we have the thought of going the e-commerce route, usually there are some big names that come to your mind very naturally, like Amazon first and Walmart and so on. I guess my question would be in the social commerce side of things, because then we have Meta, we have TikTok as one of the main players. Is there any of these specific companies I just mentioned that you would say is usually the one that can in 2024 give you the highest chance of success given the traffic that they're currently bringing to the table or the level of engagement? Because I'm sure, like as people say in the e-commerce of things, that Amazon's usually the fastest way to get those initial sales because of the market penetration they got. I'm sure maybe in social commerce you have some insights about what is the best platform to get started at first, right?
Yeah. So obviously every brand we work with is doing its work to get into or better placement on Amazon ASAP, since that is like the market dominator right now. And I'm excited to see Walmart coming a little bit more front and center and really giving them a run for their money. Related to social, I think I would honestly, if in your gut, you as a founder or a marketer at an e-commerce business, like don't have a point of view on who's going to respond better, the user base on TikTok or the user base on Instagram, I would be launching them both. They do have different strategies by ways of like what types of content is going to engage the person to even cross the fence and make the purchase. But if you really don't know where success is going to be most likely, they're not that complicated to set up. It's going to take a couple hours per platform. I would say that would be a worthwhile exercise, is getting live on both Instagram and TikTok and seeing which one wins. We've had surprises. Like we've had brands that we believed were so Gen Z and Gen Alpha and native to TikTok, and then ads in Meta shop do better. So I think it's a try, like there, that would be a worthwhile A/B test, I guess is my take on it.
Cool. Now, when it comes to getting started on this platform, you mentioned something there that I feel people struggle a lot, which is content, right? Especially when you start want to do content at scale and enough quantity to make a significant impact, can become very costly and time consuming. So I guess my question for you, because I know a lot of people will encounter this issue, is there any maybe period before going live in social commerce that you should invest into creating as much content as possible in terms of, you know, let's spend the first 2 months only working with the top influencers and UCG content to have a lot of at least 1 month or 2 months in advance of content, or how you try to basically create a timeline where once you go the social commerce route, essentially you don't become the bottleneck of what those markets by nature demand from you, which is content. So how you keep up with the speed of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I would reduce as much friction as possible. So I think like if the goal is to get TikTok Shop lives and test whether or not it's a plausible long-term place to be, don't put so many time blockages in front of you. So by that, I mean, work with a couple creators right now, get a couple affiliates set up, you know, get a couple posts a week minimum in the calendar of things you're capable of doing, and then throw Spark ads at everything. Mm-hmm. If you have the budget to Spark, you know, even $20 a day is the minimum, $50 a day is more likely. Like if you have the budget to do that, there is no reason to wait. So I would say like reduce those needs to wait 2 months because you have to build this content XYZ. I would say throw the few dollars per day at it to prove it out more quickly so that then you have the case to say, now we do have to invest in the content.
Interesting. And you mentioned that's something that I'm sure a lot of people might be wondering, what is that, which is Spark Ads? So it would be interesting if you can tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so in the ad space, and something similar applies on Meta, they're just called boosts over there. But in the ad space, when you're running campaigns through the proper ads manager, so the TikTok ads manager, there are two ways in which you can load ad content. One is you know, create it elsewhere and you load it as an ad in the back end. The other is you pick up organic content and it's called Spark on this platform. So you're picking up your brand's organic content, or you're picking up your creator partner's organic content about your brand and using that as ads. And, you know, I had a client reach out to us last night saying like, oh, Sparks are doing so much better than ads. Why is that? And I think it's just the nature of where we are in space and time of just like, no one wants to be sold to. Some brands' ads are still very salesy and their organic content is more educational or fun or all of the things that engage us, right, as consumers. And so it's no surprise that these Sparks on TikTok or boosts on Meta are the ad format that work better right now because they're less in your face, buy, buy, buy right now. And that's what we all respond to. So that's usually why going live on shops and utilizing organic posts as Sparks is the best path to this A/B testing. Where do you want to be live in the social e-commerce space long term?
Yeah, because I guess essentially what they're doing, which is effectively the nature of social commerce, it has the surprise effect. It's like you as a consumer don't expect these ads to show and then they surprise you. And then if emotionally touch the need that you effectively can convince you to buy, you take the action on the spot, right? Right, and people targeting you over and over again and following you around every single place you go. Now, I guess the question with this is like, I feel maybe, of course, this is going to be super effective at the beginning, when especially when you don't have data, you don't have really enough KPIs to make a validated decision on where you want to scale things to. But I guess for people that is already maybe doing a Spark Ads or Boost Post, and then they're starting to think, okay, I already have some clear insights about where the business is going, what is my avatar, what is happening. What is effectively the next stage in social commerce to take it to the next level? What I mean is like, do we start being much more specific with the avatar? How do we go from there? Yeah.
So I think because in the ad space, so much of what makes a good campaign structure is leveraging machine learning, which means we as ad buyers are no longer saying, you know, this person is in these couple of regions of the country, the world, their household income is XYZ, and they like Burger King. I'm just making it up. We're not putting that into the system anymore, right? We're just saying, hey, our goal is a conversion. You go out and tell us who converts. What people get lost in there, they're like, well, first, they're like, why do we even need an ad management agency? It seems so simple. But the second part of it is also like, why do we need to build personas at all or maintain them? And it's truly because the ad unit has to speak precisely to that persona. And that's when you have the recipe for success. So in terms of figuring out how to then scale, it's really creating some sort of back-end math around like, for every X dollars in spend, you're going to need new assets. Are they going to come from the brand? Are they going to come from the creator? Are they going to, you know, do you have a plan for that, right? So that's like the first line of defense. And then the next is when things start to fatigue in any ad campaign, like you have to have strategies. And yeah, they're all going to be machine learning strategies, but you have to have someone knowledgeable enough who can see the trends and the tea leaves and kind of like make sense of the right next move before it becomes a problem. So that's sort of like the scope of what happens in this lane in terms of like how many dollars do you spend, what types of campaigns and where. It's all going to vary a little bit client by client and what, you know, what their product and assortment looks like. But I would say the main KPI we track in both social commerce and e-com, when we look at the two of those combined as like one entity, if you will, is marketing efficiency rate or ratio, which is total e-commerce revenue or social revenue divided by spend. And as long as that number is well above their break-even point, well above their acceptable rate, and we can grow that number because the higher the better, that's kind of what we're looking at as ad managers to prove success and efficiencies of a program. And I think the benefit of doing things that way is it allows us to have the client come on board with this need to do a little bit more awareness rather than remarketing. Because in the old days, when we were stuck in CAC or MER or CAC or ROAS specifically, some media buyers were a race to like, how much can you spend on remarketing? Because that's where all of the efficiency comes from. But in this new lane where we're focused on MER, we get to say, hey, we can spend 30% more on awareness and it doesn't impact your MER. So wouldn't you rather us do that than remarket to people, you know, 8 times per day just to like desperately ask them to convert?
Yeah, and I think the beauty of also spending awareness on an efficient approach is that compared to the methodology of only retargeting, effectively you can increase the scope of the potential extra consumers that can discover your brand and become loyal fans, because the only thing you do is retargeting. Eventually, that bubble is going to get smaller, smaller, smaller until eventually there's no more effect in terms of what the ads can do. So it's super important to keep, you know, increasing the scope. Now, with that, I feel a lot of questions sometimes I hear from e-commerce sellers is, I say, whenever it comes to social commerce, given that there's so many platforms, sometimes it can be tough to quantify the 360 approach. Essentially, what I mean is, like, let's say you're across all these markets, and then it start to become really amazed in terms of, okay, what if the person saw me in Facebook, then they saw me in Instagram, then they saw me in TikTok, and then eventually they converted in Pinterest, right? It's like it becomes such a complex machine, and then it can be tough to really understand which one is actually giving you the best ROAS. So I know the software's around that and so on, but high level in terms of advice, like, why you recommend people, especially when getting started, to quantify maybe which one is the channel bringing the best impact on this? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you're right. Like, using a North Beamer or a Triple Wheel makes the life of telling that story a lot easier. But I think, like, this is the beauty of looking at things from an MER perspective, right? Because if we can say, okay, we're spending $50K a month, month over month over month, and, you know, you aren't dropping any new products, so the business is pretty steady. However, we're going to take, you know, $10K one month and spend it on Pinterest for the first time ever. If we can do that and also sustain their MER, there wasn't a risk in doing that, right? I mean, there wasn't a reward either, but like it didn't hurt the business. So then we kind of get to toggle around and say, how much can we play with this Pinterest thing? Start looking at traffic from Pinterest and like direct last click sales or GA4 attributed sales, and kind of like make a little bit of sense of whether or not this is a place where we would want to invest heavier. So I think, like, at the simplest level, and I know some, you know, brand managers hate this because they're like, I feel so great. Like, what are you telling me? I don't feel confident with any of this. So I think it's sort of like first finding a way to get confidence in the strategy and then alignment on it. And we're like, there's never an instance where a client's like, stop telling me about ROAS. I don't care. Like, only tell me MER. Like, they absolutely want to know CAC or ROAS all the time. And then they want us to justify whenever it's declined, right? So, like, that's not going anywhere for some time. But I think the more that can be like a secondary play, the better. We've got a client right now who top line is on fire. They're up like 150% year over year, but ROAS is declining. So, like, we are in that situation in real time. And we're like, okay, well, if you want to focus on ROAS, we can flip our, you know, flip our script and do way more remarketing, but like your top line.
And I feel the conversation gets even more interesting when we start bringing to the equation lifetime value. Like, this is another thing that people don't even consider, because then on the surface, you might think that, yes, you're maybe not as profitable as you think, because essentially you're eating the customer acquisition cost. But then what people don't factor in is that, okay, you're having that expense once, but then that client keeps coming back 10, 20, 30 times. And that's something that on paper, on the ads, that's not going to be reflected, but that's essentially pure profit that's coming organically, you know?
Right. Yeah. And that's like a part of that beginning strategy of like how we talk to clients that we're thinking about bringing on is, not only is it earned and owned versus paid, and how do you stack up where your traffic comes from, how your sales are looking, but then like, what do you have from a lifetime value perspective? Because we, you know, those early stage brands, they're so new, they don't know what lifetime looks like yet. And if they're a couple years old, maybe they've got some data, but like, we don't know if they have a leaky bucket or if they really have a product that everyone and their mom wants. And so I think that's the challenge with the early stage brands, is like doing projections properly in that regard.
Cool. Now, I want to start bringing a little bit about this before we end the podcast today, which is how this can affect, for example, people that do Amazon, right? Because I strongly believe social commerce, if done correctly, you're definitely going to see an impact on your Amazon store, because by nature, and I do this all the time, I might see an ad on TikTok, I might see an ad on Instagram or Facebook, and then I go to Amazon and shop it, right? Because I just trust Amazon more. They have all my information. I have Prime delivery and so on. So from your experience of working with the brands that they have also an Amazon presence, how do you see social commerce playing now, basically an impact into the e-commerce growth?
Yeah, I mean, to your point made earlier, like this is all becoming so gray and cloudy, right? Because I do think there's validity in what you're saying, and like a triple whale will give you some of the omnichannel attribution and details and in a customer journey. So I think the more sophisticated and affordable some of these tools are to provide insights to clients, the more, and brand owners, like the more comfortable they're going to be. Is social commerce going to take away from Amazon? Yeah, in some cases. Is it going to strengthen them? Yeah, because people like you are going to want to go buy on Amazon. It's trusted. The reviews there are honest, etc. So I think like, as long as like we go back to that MER, whether e-commerce or omnichannel, as long as we're in a place of great profitability for the brand, I'm in support of like continuing to diversify and like make the process and the insights like even more gray in service of like knowing that the business is in a healthy spot.
Yeah, I think it's such an important thing, because just briefly touching on the Amazon space specifically, I see that's why a lot of people are struggling now, because they built their business thinking that Amazon was their business, actually instead of seeing Amazon only as a channel. And that's why now we see things shifting. Like people that did very strong DTC, social commerce, they actually build a brand, they're having a successful journey on Amazon. But people that only had a product, they never built really awareness or a brand. Mm-hmm. They're having a tough time. So that's why I think this topic is so important, to basically open up the eyes of a lot of founders that, you know, Amazon is definitely a good place to be and you must be there 100%, but you need to start thinking how you start creating more touch points to basically enter into new audiences that can also be very good in terms of revenue for your business, you know?
Yeah. And I think the final thing on there, because you did it, I wanted to jump in with this earlier, is like, wherever you have the highest conversion rate or the best couple of channels for conversion rate, like that's where you should focus. I mean, getting someone to your e-commerce website to then have 1% of them convert might not be a good, you know, scenario for a business. So that's where you do leverage the marketplaces as well as social commerce very hard, because you know the conversions come more easily there.
Yeah, so important. Now, Nick, I think we covered, I mean, amazing topics, very good conversation. I love it. So to conclude, is there any other insight maybe you want to share in terms of, you know, everything regarding social commerce, or maybe some tips when people getting started, just trying to get as much wisdom as possible out of you?
I mean, I think I would encourage anyone who isn't on TikTok Shop to get live there and test out some Spark ads to see if you can drive better results there than you maybe are on your Shopify e-commerce store. It's just kind of that proof point again to like figure out your long-term strategy. In terms of what we'd love to offer to anyone listening to the e-commerce lab today is if they email me, Nikki@pennock.co, P-E-N-N-O-C-K.co, I'd love to give them a free paid media audit and kind of look under the hood of their business with them.
Awesome, Nikki. Thank you so much for that. I'm going to make sure, guys, to put all the information in the description. Other than that, it's been such a pleasure. I appreciate your time, and I can't wait to have you again in the future for
more discussions
about this. Yeah. Thank you so much. Have a nice one.
Bye-bye. You too.
Thanks for listening to The E-Commerce Lab by EcomC. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. While you are at it, we would appreciate it if you could leave an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. That will make it easier for others to find out about the show and benefit from it. Want more? Visit our website at www.ecomc.com, where you can get your first consultation for free. Or find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn @ecomc.